When we decided to, you know, make this challah week, I was actually very excited because it brought to mind the memory of, I think it was about 6 years ago when I was in Israel, when I was pregnant with Bat Yisara. I had this chus of going to Rabbi Zinkan Yefti on Thursday afternoon and being there for the freshest challah experience. And to describe it in words, I don't think would, you know, do it justice. It was just, there was just something so much more there than just the actual taking of the challah. It's almost like you felt enveloped in this cloud of, you know, of spirituality. She was a woman who just shone and made everyone around her, you know, feel that amount of kedusha and also that special. And it was just something so special and something so uplifting that I just was so excited to actually, you know, delve into it and to see what is so special about this mitzvah of challah and why is it so special specifically to women. So I think we'll start in this week's parsha, in Parsha Shlach. The pasuk tells us, "V'yedaber Hashem al Moshe l'emor, daber el bnei Yisrael v'amart aleihem." Hashem says to Moshe, "Speak to bnei Yisrael and tell them, 'B'voachem el ha'aretz asher ani mevi eschem shama, when you come to the land that I'm going to bring you to, v'achaltem milechem ha'aretz, and you eat from the bread of the land, tarimu teruma l'Hashem, you should, you know, uplift, you should separate a gift for God." Rishis Ariso Sechem Chala Tarimu Teruma Ketrumas Goren Kain Terumosa. The beginning of your Ariso Sechem, of your kneading, of you should set aside a gift, a truma, like the truma tagoren, like the truma in the threshing fields. May Rishis Ariso Sechem Titnu Hashem Trumula Zarasechem. So from the first portion of your kneading, you should give Hashem an uplifted donation for your descendants. This is the commandment. We're in commanded that when we knead dough, when we're going to make bread, we should take aside a piece, which we call a truma, a gift for, you know, for God. Actually, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, we would take aside this piece and we would give it to the Kohen. Similar to what the pasuk compares it to truma, when a person would work in the field and they would come to the harvest, they would set aside a portion also for the Kohen. So we see that the mitzvah of challah is very similar to the mitzvah of truma. Not only does the pasuk compare challah to truma, but it actually calls this mitzvah of challah truma. In fact, there's a debate as to what bracha we should actually make on this mitzvah. And some are under the opinion that we should say lahafish truma, not lahafish challah, because challah is this concept of truma. It's interesting, the challah has almost become the name of the bread to remind us of this mitzvah that we have when it comes to the bread. So on the one hand, these mitzvos of challah and truma, they're similar. And they deal with separating and uplifting a piece that's supposed to be set aside for the Kohen, and obviously they're connected to Eretz Yisrael. And on the other hand, when you take a closer look at these two mitzvos, they are distinct and different. First, on the one hand, you have challah, which we find in Sefer Bamidbar, and we have truma, which we find in Sefer Devarim. So why are they in different sfarim, in different locations? We have the mitzvah of truma, which applies when we come to Eretz Yisrael after the Sheva Shekivshu v'Sheva Shechoku. When we come to Eretz Yisrael, there are 7 years that we are kovish, that we conquer the land, and then 7 years that we are cholik, that we divide the land, and only then does truma apply. Whereas challah applies immediately. Right when we come to Eretz Yisrael, we have this mitzvah. In fact, there are times that truma does not apply when challah does apply. We don't take truma during the years of Shemitah, but when it comes to challah, we do. So why do they apply to different time periods and on different occasions? Also, we have truma, which applies to the field. It applies to the harvest when the wheat is turned into flour, and then we have the mitzvah of challah, which applies at the point of kneading. When a person is kneading dough, that is when we're supposed to take it aside. In fact, it's interesting because although it's connected to Eretz Yisrael, midoraisa, you know, from a biblical standpoint, if a person were to take flour from Chutz La'aretz but knead it in Eretz Yisrael, that dough would require challah. Also, it's interesting that now we don't have a Beit HaMikdash, but there still is a rabbinic you know, commandment to keep those mitzvot. And in Eretz Yisrael, we know that it's not so simple just to buy, you know, an apple from the bodega. You have to check. Well, was this from land that they took truma from? Did they take meiser? Did they follow these things? In New York City, it's much easier to just walk down the street and, you know, buy an apple. And the same thing in Eretz Yisrael, we have challah. But what's interesting is that in America, while we don't have the mitzvah of truma, from a rabbinic standpoint, we do have the mitzvah of challah. And what the Rabbanim tell us is so that we don't forget about this mitzvah. Why is it so? Why does it only apply to challah and not to truman? So I think in order to understand it a little deeper and to answer all our questions, we have to first understand what is the mitzvah of challah? What is bread? So we know that bread is our life source. It's our mazon. It's our sustenance. In fact, making bread is actually a very involved process. Bread doesn't grow from the ground. We don't just pick it and eat it. But man has to work the earth. He has to plow. He has to sow. He has to do many things. You have to make it into flour. You have to knead it. It's a process to come to make bread. And it's very easy to get very involved with this physical and mundane process and to forget totally about spirituality. The Torah tells us in Devarim, Kilo alechem levado yechia adam. Bread is not enough to sustain man. Man cannot live on bread alone, but rather, ki al kol motzei pi Hashem yechia adam. We live by that which emanates from God's mouth, the mouth of God. Meaning, we need spirituality. We need connection to our life source. That is what we need. It's not just enough to eat bread and that's what's going to sustain us and that's going to keep us going. We need a source of spirituality. We need to be connected to our life source. And this is exactly what challah ensures. This is the purpose of challah. When I'm involved in the mundane act of making bread, what do? I take challah. It reminds me that even mundane acts are connected to spirituality. And when I work hard and I'm kneading and I'm braiding the dough, challah reminds me that the material blessings in my life and my creative energies are also gifts from Hashem. So challah ensures that the physical and spiritual remain one entity and that everything ultimately connects back to the source, it connects back to Hashem. When the Torah commands us, in the mitzvah of challah, it states, "Bevoachem el haaretz asher ani mevi eschem shama." When you come to the land to which I bring you to. The Magen from Kuznets explains in a very interesting way. He says, when you come to the land, meaning when you come to be involved in things that are artsy, when you come to be involved in physical things, when you come to Eretz Yisrael, when you come to this point and you're involved in physicality, ani mevi eschem shama. You should know that I am the one that brought you there. We not only cannot forget Hashem in the process, but we have to remember that Hashem brought us to this point, meaning the spirituality, that there is spirituality infused into something that seems so mundane and so physical. It's so interesting that, how do we refer to challah? We refer to the mitzvah as challah. How do we call bread? Lechem. What does the word challah mean? The mitzvah is called challah. What does the word challah mean? Comes milashon chol, chul, ordinary. We don't call it dough, we don't call it bread, we could call it isa, we could call it lechem. There are so many things that we can refer to this mitzvah. We refer to the mitzvah as challah, milashon chol. And what is this telling us? The Torah is teaching us that there's no such thing as ordinary. Everything in its essence is kadosh. And what does Hashem do? Hashem charges us with this task of preserving the holy essence. We have to find the spirituality and infuse the mundane with this concept of spirituality. It's interesting that this idea is very much reflected in an actual word or the structure of the word of challah. We have a letter ches. What is a letter ches? You have two lines coming down the side and then a line on top. Basically, you're totally enclosed on all three sides and then you have this gaping hole at the bottom. What does the ches symbolize? Basically, it symbolizes the physical and the material world. Very much so, a man is inclined to be pulled down to this world. And yet, in the challah, we end with the letter he. What the he is very similar to the ches is that it's basically enclosed on all three sides, except on the inner leg, there's that little opening on top. Because in contrast with this letter ches, we have this opening in the letter hey. Despite this draw, this pull of the physical world, you know, down, to be pulled down to the physical, to the earthly matters, to be drawn after materialism. There's the opening on the top reflects this awareness and this desire to connect to the one above, to connect to our source, to connect to Kedusha, to infuse it with spirituality. And according to Kabbalah, it's interesting, what is the word chala? Chala can be broken up into two words. Chal hay, meaning place the hay. So in this world, we inhabit this world, which is very much physical. It's just like the letter ches. We have this, the hole on the bottom, which basically pulls us down into the physical, into the material. And often when we're so involved in the physical and the material, godliness is totally put out of the picture. So it is our job to infuse the physical with the spiritual. It is our job to place this hay, to place this place where we can bring Hashem into the world, where we can infuse it with Kedusha, where we can bring down the spirituality into the physicality, connecting it back to its source and being cognizant of Hashem in all of our in all of the creation. We see, even in regards to all of these insights, that the concept of challah and truma are once again very similar. Rav Hirsch, however, is medayik in the pesukim. And when we go back to those original pesukim that we read, he says that there is a significant difference between terumas arisa, the truma of the kneading, and the truma of the goren, the classical truma of the threshing field. He says that we read those pesukim. It says that it's just like the truma, and that's how you should perform this mitzvah. And then once again, the pasuk repeats, "Meireishis ariso sechem tithnu l'Hashem truma l'dor sechem." From the beginning of your kneading, you should give, you know, an uplifted gift for generations. Again, we're repeating it. And Rav Hirsch explains why we're repeating it, to show that there's something independent about the mitzvah of challah. There's something, yet they're connected, but yet there's something significant and there's something different. For example, if a person prepares dough that is exempt from teruma, remember we said teruma is when you prepare flour or you have a field and you take a part of a certain portion and you set it aside for the kohen. What would be things that would be exempt from teruma? Leket, shichacha, peah. Remember those parts of the field that we leave behind for the aniyim that we don't touch. So that is not obligated in teruma because I'm leaving that aside for the poor. However, if flour is made from those portions of the field, it's still chayav and challah. If dough is made from that challah. Additionally, we have the Shemitah period. Remember, a period of 7 years. In the seventh year, we don't work the land. We leave it. It rests. That land is not chayav and truma. We're not working it. There's nothing to separate. There's nothing to do. We leave the land alone. However, if a person were to make dough from flour in the year of Shemitah, that flour would be obligated in the challah. So again, we see that yes, while they are so similar, they're inherently different, and there's something very distinct about the two. And he says, how does he explain? He says that truma sagora, in this classical sense of the truma, it refers to the general harvest. It affects us on a national level, right? It's the land, it's the out there, it affects everyone in the same type of way. But he says the mitzvah of challah is God's connection to each and every household. It's specific to each and every bias, to each and every household, and what comes down and the relationship between God and man and the family on that very personal and that very personal level. And I really think that it's based on this idea that we can really understand why challah is one of the special mitzvahs of a woman. While man is classically usually the person that's working and cultivating the field, the woman is working and cultivating in the home. Each one accomplishes based on their unique attributes, obviously, that Hashem has given them. Man is on the outside. Man is the branches. Man is the warrior. He is the one that works the land. The woman is on the inside. She is the roots. She is the nurturer. She is the one that builds the home. In fact, the woman is called Yakeres Habayis. She's the mainstay. She's the anchor of the home. And according to Jewish Hashkafa, men and women are both king and queen, but they reign in different domains. In fact, the Lubavitcher Rebbe compares this to two parts of the human body. He says that you have the heart and the brain. Each part is extremely important for the function of the human being. And each part, to a certain level, depends on the other part, but yet their job is very significant and yet very different. The Gemara in Yevamos tells us of a very interesting conversation between Rav Yossi and Eliyahu HaNavi. Rav Yossi turns to Eliyahu Navi and he says, you know, the pasuk tells us, Eselo Ezer Kenegdo. Hashem saw Adam and he says, Lo tov heos Adam levado. It's not good for man to be alone. I'm going to make him a helpmate. So Rav Yossi turns to Eliyahu and he says, so Eliyahu, tell me, in what way is woman a helpmate to man? And what does Eliyahu answer? He says, Adam evi chitin. Chitin koseis. Pishtan. Pishtan lovish. Man brings home wheat. Can he eat wheat? Man brings home flax. Can he wear flax? But then then he continues and he says, Lo nimtzeid me'ira et einav umamidaso al raglav. She brings light onto his eyes and stands him on his feet. It doesn't end by saying, no, she takes care of his physical needs. She fills his belly. She clothes his body. It doesn't say that. Because what she does is so much deeper than just helping him take care of his physical needs. She is the one who opens his eyes. She is the one who stands him on his feet. She makes him a person. She makes him a mensch. The term for a human being is a homo erectus, meaning a person who stands upright, a human who stands upright. She is the one who helps raise him above animal. A woman is the nurturer. She takes the wheat, she takes the flax, and using her creativity and her kochos, she transforms it and she uplifts it. Her job is not simply a list of housekeeping to-dos. In fact, we know that Chazal tell us, Chachmas Nashim Bansa Besa. Her job requires wisdom. In fact, it requires so much wisdom that women are endowed with a Bina Yisera, an extra measure of insight and of intelligence in order to help them complete this task. Man is compared to the Shamayim. He's compared to the sky. He rains down the Shefa, the abundance. He brings home the wheat. The woman is compared to the Aretz, the land. She takes it in, she cultivates it, she nurtures it, and then with that, she produces. A woman is given these special mitzvos to help her accomplish her job. As we discussed specifically with Chala, she uplifts the physical, and she connects everything back to its source. She infuses the mundane with spirituality, and she always brings God back into the equation. In fact, it is the mother who teaches a child what emunah is. A mother is the person who teaches the child what faith in God is, acknowledging that it is a higher source. It is the aim, it is the mother that is the shoresh of emunah, much more in just the literal sense of the world. In fact, we look at the word emunah, what is the shoresh? It is the aim, because that is one is the unique job and the unique task and the unique ability of a mother. Who she is defines her household. We know halachically what determines if a child is going to be Jewish. If the mother is Jewish, her identity is the defining factor. But it's much more than that. The home that she creates, it leaves a mark. It leaves an impact on future generations. In fact, when we look into Eishes Chai, we look into the praise of the woman. What are one of the praises of the woman? Noza b'sharim balar. Her husband is known in the gates. What does this have to do with the woman? I mean, everything else is singing her praises, how she does so many amazing things. Why is this her praise? Exactly this point. Because he is who he is. He is known in the gates. He is respected because of who she is. She makes him who he is. In fact, the Gemara in Bava Metzia states, La'olam yehe adam zahir bekavod ishto. She'ein habracha shruya betoch beiso shel adam, ela ba'avor ishto. A man should always be careful to properly give kavod, to give honor, to give dignity to his wife, because the only reason that he has any blessing in his house is because of her. Like the pasuk states, Shne'emar la'avram heitiv ba'avura. Why did Avraham get all of these blessings? Why did Avraham get all this good? Why was Avraham able to be this father of the Jewish people? Ba'avura, because of Sarah. The Gemara in Yevamos similarly states, Kol mi she'ein lo isha sharoi b'lo bracha. Any man who does not have a wife, who does not have this woman figure in his life, he lives without any blessing, because the woman has this unique ability to make her home into a place of blessing. David HaMelech in Tehillim writes, Kol kvuda bas melech pnima. The glory of a woman is inward. This means that she has to stay in the house. Her place is in the home? No. But rather, the home is the place that she shines. That is where you can see the true glory and the true kavod and the true respect of a woman. You know, like every person has their own place and their own place that they shine. A kid who's good at basketball, he shines on the basketball court. And someone who's good at singing, they take the spotlight when it comes to the stage. But what is the place that the woman can actualize her unique kochos and her potential? Penima. That's where her kavod is. It is for this reason that Chazal tell us, Al shalosh averos nashim mitos b'shas leidasom. It is because of three averos that women die when they are giving birth, when they are in the process of bearing a child. Al she'inam zihiros benida ubachalu ubalak asner, because they are not careful with the laws of nida, they're not careful with the laws of chala, and they're not careful with the laws of halak asner, of lighting candle. But the obvious question is, a woman is chayav in many mitzvahs. She's chayav in Shabbos, she's chayav in Kashrus, she's chayav in v'yahavta reicha kamocha. So why specifically is she judged in terms of these three mitzvahs? She's judged in terms of these three mitzvahs because these three mitzvahs represent her central job, the building of a home, which is based on these three mitzvahs. The demand Hashem will have on us is how do we use our womanhood? Not are you pariv? You know, how did you do these other mitzvahs that apply to everyone else? But how are you unique? How did you use the unique kochos that I gave you? How did you use them? How do you express your womanhood? How do you express your individuality into this world? The pasuk in Mishlei, in describing the foolish woman, the Eshet Kesilut, writes, she sits at the door of her house. The Matutas David explains why she's sitting on the door of her house. She's sitting to see the passerby. She sits on this high chair so that her voice can be heard in the distance. Because it's the foolish woman that directs her energies outward. Instead of using her God-given gifts and talents to create an environment around her which ultimately elevate herself and those around her, she's looking outside. Now ladies, what I'm saying to you is not, a woman has to stay in the house, lock yourself up, don't go outside, there's nothing you can do outside. But rather, my unique kochos, how am I directing them? In what way am I expressing my femininity into this world? How am I utilizing these to accomplish my central role of building my house? Obviously, there are ways that you can use them, and it's important to do chesed for others and go outside, and there's a lot of talents that people can have and use in other ways. But in what ways am I using it to accomplish my ultimate tafkin? I once heard Rebbetzin Heller say that the biggest anti-feminists are the feminists themselves, because they're so busy trying to make themselves like the men, and to be equal like the men, to be the same as men, and do the same thing as men, that they actually deny what makes them special and unique as women. When I think about all these groups nowadays, so much in the media today about the women of the wall, the women of the wall, you know, women who want to pray and wear talisim and tefillin at the wall just like the men. And I can't help but feel sad for them, because they've never been taught the joy and the beauty of what it means to be a Jewish woman. They were never explained the importance of our mission, and so they try to liberate themselves by trying to make themselves more and more like men, denying who they are as women. In many religions, the church is what's central. But in Judaism, we have a dichotomy. We have two places that are both equally important. We have the synagogue and we have the Jewish home. In fact, the home itself is called the Mikdash Ma'at. It's a mini sanctuary. It's a mini shul. And that is the woman's job. The woman is charged with this great mission. She makes her home into the sanctuary. She makes her home into this Mikdash. She shows her family the spirituality and the physical, and she reminds them of the source. And I really think that this is the answer to our initial question about the difference between Truma and Chala. Truma is a mitzvah of the agriculture. It's a mitzvah of the fields. Chala is a mitzvah of the home. In fact, Chala is the message. The message of Chala is the cornerstone of the Jewish home. And therefore, it applies even when Truma doesn't apply. It applies to leket, to shichcha, to peah, to things that we don't take truma from. It applies even during Shemitah. It applies even before the land of Eretz Yisrael is conquered. Because it's not based on the land, but it's based on the Jewish home. It's a mitzvah that it's so important that we keep it in Golus, where we don't keep truma, so that we don't forget the important message of what challah is. And it is therefore given in by Midbar and not in Devarim. Most of the mitzvahs in Devarim center around the mitzvahs that have to do with Eretz Yisrael. But challah is given in by Midbar. Because even though obviously in the Midbar we ate man and there was no truma from the man, but challah is shayach to a Midbar. Challah is shayach to wherever we are, wherever we're traveling as a nation. This concept of challah is shayach. In fact, by challah, the pasuk adds this concept of truma l'dor seichem. This have this uplifted gift for generations, which it doesn't state by truma, because what challah achieves is truly a gift for the generations. It sets the tone. It builds the future. It shows us what our anchor should be. It shows us what our focus should be. It shows us that our mission in this world is to connect the spirituality with the physicality, to infuse the physical with Kedusha, and always to connect everything back to our source, whether it's our material possessions or our creative talents and our co-hosts, our ability, we have to connect everything back to the source. And in this way, challah, more than truma, is a gift, is a truma l'dor seichem. It's a gift for generations, and it applies at all times, in Galus and in Eretz Yisrael, before we conquer the land, even when other mitzvot that are tulios ba'aretz that are connected to the land do not apply. And with this, I want to end with a pasuk in Yechezkel, which states, V'reishis ariso seichem tzitznu l'kohen l'aniach bracha al beisecha. You should give the first of your kneading, the first of your dough, you should give to the Kohen, lahaniach bracha al beisecha, to bestow a bracha, to bestow a blessing on your house. How fortunate are we as Jewish women that we are charged with this unique job, with this unique mission. We are the ones that have this ability to bring down blessings into our homes and into our families. We are the ones that it says that a man has to, if a man does not have a wife, he lives without bracha, because it is the woman who has this unique koach to bring this bracha into our home. And I hope that it's in the zechus of these righteous women, the nashim tzidkenios, who perform these mitzvos, who build these homes, that we're able to see the goel b'mehirah yameinu.
Shkayach. And just before we get to the physical, I'm not going to take care of that, the kneading. I have no idea how to do it, and I'm excited to learn. But I just wanted to go through some of the halachos that are important and sometimes overlooked, and just to go over some of the halachos. And I just wanted to mention that the Torah that my wife just gave, which was beautiful, and the halachos that we're going to mention now should be a schus. Refuah Shlema for my father Yitzchak Yaakov and Bat Yisara. So it's interesting when we decided to implement Challah Week, so we were all excited. But then something happened on Friday where I really saw that there was a special hashgacha to have Challah Week this week. And I mentioned it to the men in the shir last night, and I want to mention it to you guys. When a woman is mafresh challah, and we'll discuss the details in a second. So the Rama writes that Bizman Azeh, in our days, she should take off a kezayis. After she makes the bracha, she takes off a kezayis, and then she takes care of that. She doesn't give it to the Kohen, because Bizman Azeh, we don't give truma to the Kohen, we don't give challah to the Kohen, we're not sure about the Kohanim, and we don't have Kohanim that we give all the mitzvos and the matonos to. So if you look back historically and biblically, the measurements of the mitzvah was not a kezayis. It wasn't the olive that we're used to when it comes to other mitzvahs. It was actually 1/24th or 1/48th. Depending on who was baking the challah, whether it was a woman in the house, or, which is called challahs balabayis, or it was the nachtom, the baker, then it would be 1/48th for the baker, and it would be a smaller shear, 1/24th, for the household. However, Bizman Hazeh, you don't find this because we just take off a kezayis. Why it's different, we'll explain in a second. Yet what happened on Friday was as follows. So Rebecca was taking our daughter, Bat Yisara, on a play date, and I was left in the home, which is obviously not the place for the man, as we just heard. I was left manning the fort and watching the kids, and Tzvi was playing upstairs, and I was with Akiva downstairs, And I opened up a chumash. I started to be maver the sedra right before Shabbos. And Akiva came over to me while I was learning, and I see him chewing a piece of challah. And I said, uh-oh, where did this come from? So I went to go investigate, and I went into the kitchen, and I saw all the food set up for Shabbos on the stove, and then the two challahs that were there, and he took off a piece of the challah of the challah that we're going to use for Friday night. So I called Rebecca, I told her about it, and she said, not a big deal, don't worry about it. I have another roll in the freezer, we'll use that. Fine, very good. I came home later that night from shul, and I'm about to make kiddush, and Rebecca said to me, you're not going to believe what happened. Akiva snuck in while she was davening mincha, and took a piece of the challah roll that I just took off. So now we had a problem. Akiva was already creating this to be a system. Whatever challah we would take off, he would. So we were in trouble. What were we going to do? So I remembered that there was a Chacham Tzvi, the Shari Tshuva in Shulchan Aruch quotes this, that there are certain scenarios when you have kids like Akiva that you don't have, you can't use all your rolls, and you don't have a full shalim for Lecha Mishnah. That if there's a certain amount that was taken off, it's still reliable. It's still okay. You still can use that for the mitzvah of Lecha Mishnah. It's still complete. So how much is the measurement? How much can we take off? What's the minimum? So the Chacham Tzvi writes, well, it's based on challah. Because you see the Gemara in Erevin says that if a person wants to walk outside the tchum, outside the boundary that he's allowed to walk on Shabbos, so he has to put a loaf of bread in that area to make it that's his house for Shabbos. So what is a complete bread? So the Gemara tells us in Erevin, a complete bread is a bread that only the amount of challah was taken off. How much is that? 1/48. The challah of the baker. That's the minimum amount. And that explains the Achronim, the Chacham Tzvi, that's still considered a complete bread, even though a piece of 1/48 was taken off, it's still going to be Lecha Mishnah. So Baruch Hashem, because it was challah week, we were still able to use the challah, because Akiva only ripped off a little piece, it was only 1/48, which we learned from the baker is the amount that he has to take off in the Zman of Chazal. But it even pertains to us on those days that our kids get creative, when it comes to Lecha Mishnah, that it's still considered complete if you take off only this measurement of 1/48. Because as I said before, but the halacha today is that we don't have to take off 1/48, and it really only pertains to this Lecha Mishnah, because we are not giving it to the Kohen. If we were giving it to the Kohen, so then we would have to give a significant measurement like the 1/48 or the 1/24. However, today, since we don't give it anymore to the Kohen, so therefore really, Me'ikar Adin, you're really allowed to take off anything. There's a minhag to take off a kezayis and olives worth. What do you do with the kezayis? So again, when you create the dough, and l'chadchila, a person should be mafresh the challah at the time when it becomes a gibel, when it becomes like it is over there, and it's kneaded, and it's mishas lisha, and then you should take off, right before you take off a kezayis of bread, one should recite the bracha, and many have the practice to recite the bracha l'hafresh challah min ha'isa, but as my wife mentioned, there were those who had the practice to call it truma because it's referred to as truma in the Torah. But I think the minhag of most people is to mention it and to use the term l'hafresh challah min ha'isa. After you make the bracha like we usually do, before we pick up a lulav, before we're involved in the mitzvah, we make the bracha, we recite it over las yasan prior to the mitzvah. So then most have the practice that they should recite the bracha and then be mafresh challah. And then you should say, there's something called kriya shem, hare zu challah. You should now call it challah. But what do you do with that kezayis once you take it off? What's to be done with it? So the halacha is, because we don't give it to the Kohen, but this challah, this is not a joke. This is something very, very serious. This challah could possibly cause major problems if you don't take care of it correctly. This challah has kedusha. Not any one of us could eat this challah. Even the Kohanim, who have tumah that went out of their guf, they're restricted to eating the challah b'zman hazeh. If a Kohen would go into the mikvah, there would be a different story. It's for another shir. Technically, one possibly could allow them. And Hilchos Pesach, it's sometimes relied upon. But classically, we don't give it to the Kohen, so what do we do with it? So the halacha is you're supposed to burn it. However, if you just throw it into your oven, or throw it in, you know, open into your oven, so that could potentially trafe up your whole oven. So you don't want to do that. So what you want to do, the poskim say, is you want to wrap it up in tinfoil, that it's totally surrounded. And again, it's not clean either just to throw it in. So you want to surround it with tinfoil, and then it will be totally burnt inside the fire of the oven, inside an area that it will be totally burnt. And then you are yotzei the mitzvah of sreifas challah, which is challah that became tameh. The halacha is that you have to burn that challah, and that is part of the mitzvah. That's what one should do. Again, if it's impossible, this is what's recommended by the poskim, one should really try to burn the challah. If that is not possible, so some say if you wrap it up in a covetic way and you put it into a garbage where you don't have any other option, so that's also okay, and you'll hopefully rely on the fact that in the garbage incinerator, whatever, they'll have some sreifa over there. The Minchas Yitzchak, the Dayanim, they talk about how whether or not a person could rely on it. But Me'ikar Ikar, then a person should try, after their mafresh, after they take it off, they should try to burn the challah and burn the kazayis that you're going to take off. So when are you obligated, when are you not obligated? So it's an important halacha. Actually, we're going to be faced with this halacha in a second, which I think we're going to do, is that if you bake a dough, so it also depends on how much you bake. If you're going to only bake a small challah, so one is not obligated in challah in such a scenario. One is obligated when they bake 43 eggs and a fifth. So that comes out to be a machlokas haposkim, how much 43 eggs, bizman hazeh, comes out to be. And it ranges between the measurement of 2 pounds and 5 pounds. So the poskim say, bizman hazeh, that if a person is going to bake less than 2 pounds, you don't have to be worried about the mitzvah of challah. However, once a person is going to bake 2 pounds amount of dough, so then a person should take off the challah, but not recite the bracha. If a person is going to bake a batch that's going to have 5 pounds, which according to all the poskim is obligated to take off challah, so then in that scenario, that's when a person is going to recite a bracha. So that's going to be the range that you're going to have. It's going to go from 2 pounds to 5 pounds, and that will be depend 2 pounds a person should take off, 5 pounds a person should take off, and even recite the bracha and do like we just said before. However, are there ever any scenarios that a person will not be chayav to in challah? So the halacha is, and this is what we're going to face with over here, what happens if a person's kneading a dough, and the dough is going to be split up amongst a bunch of people? That's called, the Mishnah recites to it, amanas l'chalik. If a person is divvying up and dividing the challah up, and not keeping it as one challah, or in one domain, one area, so then that's considered a challah that's being divided up, and that's not going to be dough that's obligated in challah. So let's say, for example, if we would now give everyone their personal dough, so now we don't have 5 pounds of dough that a person's going to take home, so then that wouldn't be the whole shear and measurement that a person would be obligated about. That is an important halacha that people don't always remember. That if they're going to give out the dough, it's almanas l'chalek, so then that's not going to be obligated in challah. Now, some people have the practice, one second, is that when it's not only to divide it up to other people, Rav Shlomo Zalman is quoted in the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, and he writes that even if I myself am going to keep it, however, I decide that I'm only going to bake half now, or I'm only going to bake part of it, not the full measurement, right now, and I'm going to freeze the rest of the dough, so that is also considered some sort of divvying up. And Rav Shlomo Zalman thought that a person should not recite a bracha in such a case. A person should be mafresh challah, because according to many poskim, it's absolutely chayiv, because you're not divvying it up to other people. But those who had a different definition of what does it mean to divvy up, it's not only restricted that I can't give it to other people. But even if I myself separate the dough, and I myself don't bake all of the dough at one time or at the first available moment, and I'm deciding in my head, this will be for the dough for next week, that'll be for Purim time, that'll be for after Pesach, and I'll sell it, what I'll deal with the chametz issue. So then that is really, in essence, according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, another way of almanas l'chalik, and that wouldn't be a scenario that a person would be chayiv in challah, so therefore a person, he thought, should not recite a bracha in such a case. In my, most of the Rabbanim, I think, are of the opinion that I presented originally, the first opinion, that as long as you're not giving it out to other people, even though you're freezing the dough later on, you're still chayiv in challah, and according to many poskim, you would even be able, if you were baking 5 pounds, you would even be able to make the bracha even though you were freezing some of it to bake later. So that is the halacha of almanas l'chalik. One of the issues that came up last night in the shir, and I spoke to some of the men last night even after the shir, is that challah does not only apply to the classical bread, to lechem. Challah also applies to cakes and cookies. That's also something that's not always recognized, that even if it's not the classical flour and water, the bread, but if I'm making a large amount, a batch of challah, that has other ingredients, but if it has that flour and water base, so that would also be obligated. If it doesn't have any water, which is highly unlikely, most of even the juices that are used are also water-based, so they have water in them. Shulchan Aruch does talk about a case where you're only using juices without any water-based, so then a person would be obligated to separate challah, but they would not recite a bracha in such a case, because it's a machlokas, the Rambam and the Rush, whether or not a person is obligated if it's just mei peiros, it's just the fruit juices, and it doesn't have any water-based. But once water is mixed into that concoction, so then that would be obligated in the challah. Yes? You do the same. You say, "Oh, you're saying if it's a liquid batter." So one could, when you could make it, you could make it after you are. If you're not able to be mafresh challah at the time that it's dough, so this is important to note. Anyways, it's good you brought this up. Let's say a person forgot to be mafresh challah before they bake it. So a person can still be mafresh challah even after afia. A person after baking it could still take off a piece, and that is still obligated in challah. That reminds me, thank you very much. What if a person totally forgot to be mafresh challah, and now we have the challahs at the table? Oh no, this is a big problem.
That happened to me when I was doing this as a pula whole seminar.
So what's going to be here? So this is actually interesting. Oh, so this is the difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. When it comes to Eretz Yisrael, so a person, even if it's Shabbos, and a person should not be mafresh challah on Shabbos, because you're not supposed to make these arrangements on Shabbos, and we're concerned about it, so we don't want to make something into truma, into challah on Shabbos. The Rabbanan said that was something that was prohibited. So therefore, when it comes to challah, in challah's chutz la'aretz, because it's on a lower level, it's only on a lower level, rabbinic level, so then the Chachamim said, you can be ochel ve'acher kach mafresh. I can leave part of my challah aside and make sure to leave a part, and then I will take off a piece of that last slice or last piece of the challah and take off a piece even after Shabbos. So I'm allowed to eat the challah in Fairlawn in America and know that I'm going to keep a slice. You better keep a slice. Keep a slice, and then I will do the hafrashas challah, and it will kick in retroactively. In Eretz Yisrael, that's not the case. In Eretz Yisrael, Rav Shlomo Zalman, it's a very good question, it's a machlokas haposkim. Rav Shlomo Zalman was of the opinion that a person should not make the bracha, because since it's happening retroactively, so then a person should not make a bracha. But a person still has this eitzah in challahs chutz la'aretz. That's one of the leniencies that the rabbis gave us when it came to challahs chutz la'aretz, that you could do it after. You could be totally fine. You don't have to get everyone around your table nervous. You'll take care of it. Your husband will take care of it. After Shabbos, you'll take off a piece, and you'll say harezu challah, and you'll take care of it just like you do in the week. But in Eretz Yisrael, that's not the case. In Eretz Yisrael, you would have to somehow be mafresh before, and when it comes to Shabbos, you get into a sticky situation, because then you're not allowed to be mafresh on Shabbos, so you don't have this eitzah like you do in Eretz Yisrael. It's a little stickier, But you have to take care of it because it cannot be eaten until challah is taken off. Something which doesn't have challah taken off is the iser tevel, is something which is considered prohibited. It has the potential and the ability, because it's usr, it's like treif that can actually treif up your pots and pans that would need koshering afterwards. This is something that's very serious. Tevel is not a joke, and challah has to be taken off. It's not just a ceremony. There's two aspects to challah. On the one hand, it's now creating the dough that now is going to be permissible to eat. So it's a heter, it's a hafgasa, iser removes the prohibition. And then in the times of Chazal, it also had the nesina l'kohen. It also had the fact that it would be given to a kohen. Yes. Right.
You're talking about, so you're not obligated. But is it prohibited? Like, let's say you say, well, my whole purpose of making a challah is to make one.
You're saying under 2 pounds. You're making one challah.
Well, when you divide, when you divvy it up, you know, to other people.
So I don't think it's prohibited. I mean, if you're not, the only thing that would be prohibited would be that you're making a bracha levatala. So if you're not going to make a bracha, it wouldn't be prohibited. But the point of Chazal to make these measurements is that there's parameters to halachos, and the Torah said that only when it comes to a certain amount of shear and a certain measurement that a person is obligated in challah. So, you know, no, I'm saying I don't think it would necessarily be prohibited, but I don't think you're not accomplishing the mitzvah. So you need the measurement to accomplish the mitzvah, but you're for sure not obligated.
Slicing up the challah, you can't say in your mind, I'm taking this first slice and putting it aside.
Right, because
you have to slice up the whole challah,
right,
but have in mind to keep the last
right,
one there and not give
right,
it
because
time.
You're not allowed, even b'machshava, challah is something that the Torah says, v'nechshav l'chem trumaschem, that it is chal b'machshava. You actually have the ability to create challah in your mind. So if you would do that, you'd actually be you would be over the prohibition of being mafresh on Shabbos, because you are now doing that on Shabbos, even though you didn't state and you didn't do anything technically, but I made that into challah, so that would be a problem. So the best thing that you should do is you usually leave it over and be mafresh, and that's something that we have over Eretz Yisrael, because our challah, although both in Eretz Yisrael and here is rabbinic, our challah is challahs chutz laretz. It has a different name. It's a lower rabbinic level. So therefore, it has this kula built inside of it. Another thing that came up in the shir we dealt with last night, which is important to note, is that there's a machlokas. And what happens if you have a batter, a thick batter, but the thick batter is not going to go through the full process of challah, of regular classical bread, but rather it's going to be cooked. Many times we have a thick batter that we have at the beginning, like the dough we have over here, which is called in halacha a blila ava, a thick kneading dough. But instead of baking it in the oven like we're going to do to our regular challahs, we'll put some other ingredients in it and we'll make some sort of item and we'll cook it. I'm sure you guys, I don't have to tell you what recipes require kneading and then cooking in the end. So that is a major machlokas in the Rishonim, whether or not such an item is obligated in challah, because it's not going through all the processes of the classical bread. Again, if a person had in mind to bake it at the time that they were kneading it, so then everyone would obligate it in challah. But let's say we're talking about a classical case. The recipe book says you need a dough, you need a batter, a thick batter that doesn't pour out, not a blila raka, a thick batter like we have over there. But in the end, it's not going to be baked. It's going to be cooked. What's the definition of cooked? Means it's in a pot. It's with water. It's going to be heavy fried oil, some other medium. A baking is going into a heat source without any other medium, without any water, without any juices, without anything else in the process of heating it up. That's what's considered in halacha afia. If a person puts something in a pot or an oven and doesn't have any other medium, so that's called baking. What happens if I'm not going to bake it? I'm going to take this dough, but I'm going to put it into oil, heavy oil. I'm going to deep fry it. Or I'm going to put it into water. I'm going to cook it like I cook noodles.
So if you make
sufganiyot, very good. So that's going to get into this shaila. So the Shulchan Aruch is of the opinion of the Ramban. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that is not obligated in challah, since you're missing the kavana to bake it, and that is not, even though you're kneading a thick dough, you would not be obligated in challah. However, the Shach, in the commentary on the side of the Shulchan Aruch suggests that one should try to be machmir and be mafresh a piece in order to be choshesh for the opinion of the Rabbeinu Tam. Obviously, one should not make a bracha in such a scenario, because the Shulchan Aruch Me'ikar Adin said that we passing like the Ramban, and since you're going to cook it, that's not going to be obligated in challah, so therefore one would not make a bracha. But in deference to the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, so one should still, the Shach suggests, one still should make a hafrashas challah, take off the kazayas, wrap it in tinfoil, and then burn it in deference to that opinion.
Can you make multiple batches so you can have multiple
mitzvahs? So like multiple. What did you say?
I was going to ask you. I had that with making hamantash. Like I make one swing and then I double it again.
So if you have a batter that's all connected together, and now you're just going to bake those things separately. So since that batter was chayiv, so the bracha you recited once, and that's what that really took care of all of the batter, and that took of everything.
Yeah, that's what I made, a whole wheat batch and a regular batch.
So if you have something that you don't want to be connected and that they're totally separate, so then you could do it separately. You could do it separately, and as long as those things you don't want to be connected, you don't want them to touch, so that makes them different in their nature, and that's not going to that would mean that they would be chayiv.
Well, let's say it's not different in the nature. Just the mitzias, you don't have enough room in the bowl. You can't make 10 pounds of challah.
Were they ever one dough?
No, because I was when I was making hamantash, I doubled the recipe.
Right.
And then I double it again.
Okay.
After the fact.
So if they're never, if the 5 pounds are never connected, and there's a few different, if these 5 pounds, what connects all the challah? So let's get to this. This was going to be the next point that I was going to talk about. The classic way that you have the challah is you have 5 pounds in the tub, and they're all connected, and they're one blob of blila of a thick kneaded dough. That's the classic case. But let's say I have dough that were separate pieces, but I put them all into one container, right? So that is a way also that's called tziruf sal. You can take independent pieces of dough, place them into a tub, and as long as there is the minimum shear of challah, so because they're in one container, that would also obligate these things and connect them to obligate them in challah. Another way for you to obligate independent pieces of dough is if they're wrapped in a towel, if they're wrapped all around. That's called, the Shulchan Aruch says, Pores mapa. If you have a mapa that's spread up around, again, l'chadchila, to be also at the bottom, to act as a kli, a vessel, that's now putting all these different pieces together and being mitzarif. Mitzarif means to join all these independent pieces, so that would also obligate them in challah. But if there's no means of connection, so then they're not going to be chayv in challah. So you have the classic case of where they were made together. You have 5 pounds over here, 5 pounds over there. So that's a separate challah. And then you have when they were independent entities, and they either were put in one green container over there, all these different pieces, and that's tziruf sal. Or you could spread a mapa, either a towel or some sort of item that could take all these things and obligate them in challah. This could also potentially cause problems. Because let's say I remember in Eretz Yisrael someone was discussing this issue. Let's say you have hamantashen. So a person made a few hamantashen for shalach manos. But then my wife tells me, I want you to sort all the shalach manos. So we got all these beautiful shalach manos from the whole Fairlawn community. And I put all the hamantashen into one basket. So now I have 2 pounds or 3 pounds of hamantashen into a basket. So now that's a classical example of, even after you bake it, like you mentioned before, you could still be chayiv to be mafresh challah, you still have a problem. So now I created the chiyuv challah, even though these were coming from different places, they're now in my house, they became a tziruf, and now they became obligated. That's really all I have to say for now. Let's get to business. Let's see.
Same question. Let's see. Yeah. First batch of hamantashen, and I So let's say it's an hour.
So it's
and then I go back and I make the second batch an hour later.
So and they're separate. They each have 5 pounds, or each have a shear of challah on their own.
Right.
So they'd be chayav and challah, right? One didn't exist at the same
That's
time.
What I'm saying. So you'd have to do it twice.
Yeah. No, that if they came from a dough, there was already one glob, so then no, then you could just take care of it. And if, yeah. No, then you just take off one. It should be in the same house, and then, but that would be okay.